It's on, it's on. Several statements from Srila Prabhupada's purports, also from Harinam Chintamani, that confirm that the Lord's spiritual transcendental form is shown by his internal energy. But not, it doesn't say that it's created by his internal energy, but that it's revealed by it. But here's the statements. First, from Bhagavad Gita, purport 9:11. The appearance of the supreme personality of Godhead in this material world is a manifestation of his internal energy. The appearance is a manifestation of the internal energy. Then, 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita also confirms that when the Lord appears, he appears as he is by his internal potency. He is not contaminated by the material energy because he is the Lord of the material energy. Shukadeva Goswami said, this is now from the 10th canto, 3rd chapter. Shukadeva Goswami said, after thus instructing his father and mother, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, remained silent. In their presence, by his internal energy, he then transformed himself into a small human child. He transformed himself into his original form, Krishna's Dubha Bhavan Swayam. The word transform is there, but we understand that Krishna doesn't change. He doesn't change from one body to another, give up a body and take another one. He has both of those bodies eternally. But sometimes he shows one of them and sometimes he shows another one of them. Okay. It looks like transforming. It's just not, you know, taking away the appearance of one and replacing it with the appearance, the showing of another one. Then, there's a statement from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada's purport, Manjalila. Well, is it the purport or the verse? I don't know. The verse, chapter 21, verse 103. This is Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami speaking, Prabhupada's translation. The transcendental form of Krishna is shown to the world by Lord Krishna's internal spiritual energy, which is a transformation of pure goodness. This jewel-like form is the most confidential treasure of the devotees. This form is manifested from Krishna's eternal pastimes. It's manifested from Krishna's eternal pastimes. So the form is eternal. It's part of his eternal pastimes. But it's manifested in times and places. Okay, and then from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Harinam Chintamani, chapter 2. Excuse me. Hare Krishna. Like any object, Krishna, the Absolute Reality, is known by four characteristics: name, form, qualities, and activities. But in the case of Krishna, these elements are unlimited. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expresses himself by means of these four elements, which take their spiritual existence by means of the Lord's subtlety energy. Now here's something that actually says, that is, the four elements, which are his name, form, qualities, and activities, take their spiritual existence by means of the Lord's subtlety energy. So here's a statement that says that the energy, particularly the subtlety energy, ruled over by Lord Balaram, makes his form and his name and his qualities and activities come into being, take their spiritual existence. Okay, so that's not just making them appear, but actually making them happen by his subtlety energy. Okay, by these elements, Krishna attracts all the people of the universe, and as his name is not different, the existence of the name in the universe serves the same purpose. Okay, so you can say that Krishna's form is produced by his subtlety energy. It's based, I think that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying here. Then, again in Harinamjitamani, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, through his spiritual energy, Krishna reveals his form, name, dharma, and activity. So that's again reveals. I don't know, it depends on how you take this phrase, take their spiritual existence, what you mean by that. But it seems not to be just becoming visible, but existing. Not that they come into existence, and not that they never didn't exist some previously, and they come into existence, but they have their existence by the subtlety energy, seems to be what it says. Okay. And we may find a similar statement by Jiva Goswami somewhere here. So we should have to accept it, he says it. Now, we're going to go back and redo this doubt by the impersonalist and the answer, because I did study it again and I corrected some mistake in my translation also, so I'm going to read it again with revised translation. I think I didn't change much in the objection, but in the answer, I think I made it clearer by fixing up a few mistakes. And anyway, let me just summarize what the point of the argument is, what the gist of it is. That, see, the Mayavadis are trying to explain why these good impersonalists, the four Kumaras, got so excited about seeing the personal form of Narayana. They shouldn't normally. They're already satisfied with seeing Brahma, and there's nothing else to see, really. Everything else is illusion. And they shouldn't even see it. They go walk around the world of illusion, they don't see anything, because they're absorbed. They're not supposed to see anything, because they're absorbed in oneness. So how do we explain? So they give their explanation that they're experiencing the ecstasy of Brahma, but there's something special about the form of the Supreme Lord. They're in this world, or now they're in Vaikuntha, which as far as the Mayavadi is concerned, Vaikuntha is just another part of the material world. It's also material because it has duality, the Vaikuntha. But anyway, they're in this place, Vaikuntha, and they're seeing now the personal form of Narayana. And there's something special about the personal form of Narayana as opposed to other people's or other forms. And that is that Narayana is embodiment, full embodiment of the mode of goodness, which is material, imposed on the absolute truth. You know, it's illusion. But illusion can be, there are different kinds of illusion. So the Mayavadis have to explain different origins of those illusions. Some illusions are created by part of Brahma being covered, and some by the whole Brahma being covered. And what covers it can be different aspects of Maya, different modes. When the pure mode of goodness, meaning for them just goodness unmixed with passion and ignorance, It's still material, but it's not mixed. When unmixed goodness covers the whole of Brahman, everything, not just part of it, then the illusion that's created is God. So that illusion of God has some special potency in it, because it's goodness imposed on all of Brahman. It's a special illusion. I say the best illusion. So there's something in that that made the four Kumaras experience their bliss of Brahman even more intensely. That's the Mayavadi's explanation. The exact thing they say is, Brahman especially manifests. You can say Brahman is everywhere. Everything is Brahman. And so you can see Brahman in everything. But they're arguing you see Brahman more intensely in God than you do in an ordinary object. That was the argument of the Mayavadis, to explain what was going on. Why were they getting so excited about seeing Narayana? The answer is they were really seeing Brahman, but they saw Brahman better in Narayana than they did somewhere else. Now the answer to that. You want to comment before we get into the answer?
That just means
Narayana is better than other illusions. Narayana paro vyaktat. Shankaracharya's own words is Narayana is beyond material nature. So he's better than other illusions. He has nothing to do with material nature, but he's another illusion. He's his own kind of illusion. No, they shouldn't be an illusion. They're self-realized. Someone who's self-realized shouldn't revert back to illusion. But their eyes, you know, happen to fall on Narayan. And the argument is that their perfect Brahman realization became more perfect and more intense when they looked at Narayan.
So
the question is that Narayan's realization is good. Well, how do you compare him with Brahman? They're seeing Brahman. They saw Brahman before they met Narayan. And they're still seeing Brahman when they saw Narayan, but they're seeing Brahman better looking at Narayan.
So
the question is that Narayan is better than Brahman. No, not by better than Brahman, but he's a better reflector of Brahman. Then the comparison is between Narayan and what they saw before, which was just material things, objects of the material world. I don't see how it's an argument that it means that Narayan is better than Brahman. Narayan is Brahman. Well, he's Brahman covered by illusion as far as my mind is concerned. Okay? But the argument is that they didn't become. Yes, I'm sorry, go ahead. No, but they're trying to explain that it wasn't a distraction, that they weren't distracted from their Brahman realization, that their Brahman realization became more intense. They didn't get distracted away from their Brahman realization, they went deeper into their Brahman realization on seeing Narayan. That's the argument. Okay? Now, Jiva Goswami proceeds immediately to tear that apart. But let's see what he says. And that we already read, but I read it with a somewhat wrong translation. So let me, especially the first two sentences, let me read it again and see if the new translation makes more sense. All right, this is answered by Jiva Goswami. Uchyate. Bhavatmate tavat yat shuddha sattva chitta vittau parabrahma spurati tat samyogeva prospurati bedam shalesha parityagena eva brahma vidya tva angikarad asamyogyanasya tatvan angikarad tena kaivalya sambhavacha. Now this is complicated. I hope I got it right now. Let's see if it makes sense and we'll try to clarify it. Jiva Goswami says, in answer to that proposal, in your opinion, the opinion of the Mayavadis, the Supreme Brahman, which reflects in the functions of pure consciousness, reflects completely. Okay, not in what they just said, but in their general theory. When a person realizes Brahman, an individual person who's still conditioned, but he's in the process of realizing Brahman, and it happens in his mind. So in his consciousness, in his mind, Brahman reflects itself, shows itself. That's how they begin to actually realize Brahman. But according to their theory, Brahman doesn't get realized in parts because it doesn't have any parts. You have to realize the whole thing. But you can't split Brahman up into parts. You can't look at part of it. So, therefore, the Brahman that reflects in the functions of pure consciousness reflects completely. After all, you, Mayavadis, acknowledge actual realization of Brahman only when all traces of duality have been abandoned. If a person still has some idea of duality, like he thinks God, Krishna, is the absolute truth, then he's not really realized yet. He's still contemplating some illusion, namely Krishna. Okay, that you've got to have beyond all duality to actually be Brahman realized. That's part of their theory also. And, Jiva Goswami continues, you deny that incomplete understanding can be realization of Brahman. Okay? You may have some understanding, partial or up to a certain stage on a certain level, but that's also not realization of Brahman. Something going in that direction, but it's not actual realization of Brahman. Nor can the state of oneness be attained by incomplete understanding. We have to realize we are not different from Brahman. You can't do that unless if your understanding of the Absolute is still incomplete. Ato nashri vipikvaha adav adhikariya bhav angikara karo yujyate. Therefore, it is not appropriate for you, Mayavadis, to accept that there is an increased manifestation of Brahman in the personal body and other features of the Supreme Lord. That was the argument, that they were realizing Brahman before. But when they saw Narayan, their realization of Brahman became fuller, more complete, it increased. But realization of Brahman has to be all or nothing. It can't increase. You have to realize the whole thing or nothing. And it's not like it, you know, more is added to it. That's what we experience in devotional service. We realize something of Krishna, and then we realize more, and there's no end to it. But that's because Krishna has varieties, but Brahma doesn't have any varieties. So for the Mayavadis, they shouldn't talk like this. We can talk like that, about increasing your realization of Krishna. But you can't talk about increasing your realization of Brahma. Either you realize it or you don't. It's like the light is either turned on or it's off. Because you have dimmers, you can have it partly on, but basically, you know, we're talking about on or off, one or the other. Therefore, their argument doesn't say that. It's not appropriate for the Mayavadis to propose or accept that there's an increased manifestation of Brahma in the personal body and other features of the Supreme Lord. The explanation doesn't fit their own theory. That the four Kumaras were fully self-realized, but became more fully self-realized when they saw Narayana. It doesn't work. It doesn't fit the Mayavadi theory. Is that okay? Are there any questions about that? Okay, I think I fixed it a little bit. It makes more sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's important. You know, better you fix it now than after it's published. Better you tell me than somebody in some temple somewhere, like, you know, 6 years later tells us. Better we get it now. Can we continue? We're not done. We're not letting them go yet. Jiva Goswami has more to ask them. Kimcha shuddha sattva maya vigrahadi lakshanopadaya imavadatas tabako abhipraya. Furthermore, Jiva Goswami asks the Mayavadis, What do you mean by saying that the Lord's personal form and so on are imaginary features made of pure goodness? The form itself is an illusion. It's an upadhi. It's something imposed on the truth, on the Brahman. It's a false conception. Well, I translate it as an imagined feature. The Lord's body and everything else about the Lord, according to the Mayavadis. What do you mean by that? That their feature is made of pure goodness. What do you mean by that? That these illusions are created out of pure goodness. Do you, Kim tat parinamas te tat prachura va? That, do you mean that these features of the personality of God, his form and so on, do you mean that they are the transformations of pure goodness? Or else that pure goodness is predominant in them? Because the word is maya. Shuddha sakra maya. So what does that maya mean? You know, according to grammar, maya can mean a few things. Transformation of something, that means made out of something. Like a cake is a transformation of flour. Or does it mean that the something is prominent in the product? What does it mean? Well, okay. Two possibilities here, but nadya rajo sadbhavena parinam asambhava iti yuktam. The first cannot be the case, that the Lord's body and other features are transformations of unmixed goodness. Because it is said that pure goodness cannot undergo transformation due to the absence of the mode of passion in it. If goodness is unmixed by passion, nothing can change. All change has to be moved by the mode of passion. In the material realm. Spiritual world is another thing, but they're not acknowledging spiritual energies. If we only have material energies, no spiritual energies, then we have to follow the rule that all motion and change is affected by the mode of passion. So if you have something that's influenced only by pure goodness or created only out of pure goodness, goodness unmixed by passion, it can't undergo any transformation. It can't change. Yes?
Is it a transformation or Jews who is taking from their point of view is transformation of what? Transformation of Brahman is?
We're not talking about Brahman doing anything. We're talking about these conceptions getting imposed on Brahman. Like, there's a rope, but in my mind I think it's a snake. So there's the absolute truth, but in my mind I think it's Krishna. And so what's imposed on that absolute truth is a conception, an idea, false, an imagined feature, a person like the body of God. That's imaginary. So that's what's imposed. That's what's, and we say, we ask, well, it's said that this imagined features, these imagined features that are imposed on the absolute truth are created out of shuddha sattva, unmixed goodness. So it's the conception of a body of God that's made comes from pure goodness. What does that mean? Does it mean it's a transformation of pure goodness? Or it just means that it has a lot of pure goodness in it? So we're looking at the first of those possible alternatives can't make sense, because if it's unmixed goodness, there's no passion, and therefore there can't be any transformation. In other words, goodness itself can't change into a body of God. It can't change at all. It's like, unless you have some passion in it, your flour can't take into a cake, turn into a cake. You have to apply heat. The heat is the mode of passion. Otherwise, the flour will just sit there, won't on its own turn into a cake. Yeah. Yes?
If you give an example of the snake, seeing this rope to be a snake, so rope is kind of, what is a snake is added to there. Similarly, when they say, then when they're seeing the form of God,
yes, That is an imposition on the absolute truth.
Yeah, the absolute truth is, according to them, they say it's Brahman.
Yes, Brahman. Formless,
yeah.
Quality-less Brahman. Yeah. But it's the absolute truth. Everything is created by Brahman. Everything is Brahman. Yeah. So we're not talking about Brahman changing. We're talking about something that's been imposed on Brahman. Some idea that we're seeing, you know, on top of Brahman. That idea is changing into something else. But no, it can't. If what's being imposed on Brahman is pure goodness doesn't change.
Yeah.
Unmixed goodness, even material unmixed goodness. If there's no passion there, there can't be any change. Okay, just like, you know, flour at room temperature, without doing anything to it, doesn't turn into a cake. Or you can mix all the ingredients and let it sit there, but without an application of heat, it won't cook into a cake. What about the second alternative? Okay, then it's not a trend. Because what does it mean? We said not that it's just pure goodness, but it's pure goodness maya, is what the Maya writer said. So what does maya mean? Okay, maybe the second alternative. It means that it's that pure unmixed goodness is prominent in it. It's got a lot of, you know, just like we say, sukhamoy is happiness, is full of, his life is full of happiness. Well, there's other things in his life. You know, he has a few serious things to think about in his life, but it's got a lot of happiness in it. So we call it sukhamaya, full of happiness. It has plenty of, lots of happiness in it. Of course, there has to be something else also. Well, let's get to that. Jiva Goswami is going to say something like that. Na chantya, yeshu vigrahadishu tat prachuryam, te vishva sattvasya karnabhuta, ityartha patau, sattvam vishudam shrayate bhavam stitau, ityadi vachana jate vishudapada vayartyam iti choktameva. Well, and the other cannot be the case that the body of God has a lot of good, pure goodness in it. Since it is also said that if there is a predominance of pure goodness in the divine form and of the features of the Supreme Lord, then these features must be assumed to be products of mixed goodness. If it has a lot of goodness, it has something else, like compassion and ignorance also. Then it's mixed goodness. Which means that the word pure, shuddha, would be meaningless in the whole category of statements. There's so many statements about it. Like, for maintenance of the creation, you assume the mode of pure goodness, but it's not pure if it's mixed. Well, okay, so that knocks down both possibilities. So when they say shuddha sattva maya, it doesn't mean anything. Well, okay, then the Mayavadi tribe, one more thing. Astu Bhav Vishwatram. Or actually, we say, no, we're giving them, you know, one more chance. Okay, we'll let you assume theoretically that that mode of goodness is mixed. Okay, go ahead and do it. Astu Bhav Vishwatram. Tatapi, tadrishe brahma spurnana yogyataiva na sambhavet kim punar visheshendya iti udesha vismitis chasyat. Or else, let this mixture of modes be accepted hypothetically. And somehow, okay, we'll let you propose theoretically that the body of God is a product of not just only goodness, but the goodness mixed with other modes. Okay, go ahead and say that. But then, there would be no possibility of this mode of goodness being suitable for the reflection of Brahman on it. In it, not on it. Because it's on top of Brahman, but we see Brahman in it, because Brahman's underneath it. So, no reflection of Brahman in it, in the personality of Godhead. In other words, if God's body, what we see, was created by mixed goodness, then it wouldn't be a suitable medium in which to realize Brahman. If a mind is contemplating body of God which has some passion and ignorance in it, then that mind is contaminated and no longer fit to realize Brahman. But to speak of Brahman appearing within in a distinct form, which was the argument, that when they saw Narayan, they saw Brahman even more distinctly, even more fully than before. But we say, if you allow that the mode of goodness that manifested that form has some other things in it, then it wouldn't be able to see Brahman in that form. You wouldn't be able to see, especially you wouldn't be able to see Brahman better. You wouldn't be able to see Brahman at all. The argument is completely torn apart. And final point, it seems that you've forgotten what it was you intended to prove, because I've just contradicted themselves. Yes?
I didn't understand the last point.
You mean the last sentence?
The last argument before that.
Oh, well, that if we allow, theoretically, that the form of God is manifested, is created by a mixture, a mixed mode of goodness, then it couldn't be that the Kumaras were seeing Brahman when they looked at Narayan. Well, to speak of seeing Brahman even better than before, they wouldn't see Brahman at all. Okay? Whenever we have to deal with the Mayavadis, things get complicated. Better just leave them alone. Okay. Commentary on this. I don't know if I already meant. Maybe I didn't know. Mayavadis might propose that the Kumaras were already experiencing Brahman in their minds, and that experience increased, it became more distinct when they envisioned the personality of Godhead. I said envisioned. They saw him, or maybe they imagined him, he wasn't really there, but whatever, they envisioned. And at that time, supposedly, according to the Mayavadis, their realization of Brahman became even more distinct. But Sri Jiva replies, how can this be consistent with Mayavadi theory? Only a mind totally free from attachment to duality is supposed to be able to realize Brahman. And because Brahman has no variety, it is realized either fully or not at all. For those who follow the Mayavada mind, there is no question of realizing less or more of Brahman, or of realizing it less or more distinctly. Okay. By the term Vishuddhasattva, I don't think it's Vishuddhasattva, it's Shuddhasattva, isn't it? There's really no difference, but let me get the term right. Is the previous? No, the previous verse does say Vishuddha. Well, that's the Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
What does it say? Okay, but that, yeah, but that's not the Mayavadi's words, that's Brahma's words. But the Mayavadis talking in 78.6 do use the word Vishuddha also. I see what you mean. That's what the Kumaras said. They use the word Vishuddha. Okay, so it's Vishuddha, fine. By the word, and I'm saying how the Mayavadis used it, I want to see whether the Mayavadis used it. They did in 78.26. By the term Vishuddhasattva, the Mayavadis mean the material mode of goodness without mixture of the lower modes. From that mode, they presume, are produced God and the finite souls. But what does Vishuddhasattva have to do with imposed conceptions, such as God's personal body? Do they evolve as transformed products of Vishuddhasattva? Or is Vishuddhasattva just a prominent influence in them? The first case is dismissed because transformation is change, and movement and change only occur when impelled by rajas, the mode of passion. There is no rajas in Vishuddhasattva. And in the second case, the substance of sattva would no longer be Vishuddha, but mixed. If we allow it to be mixed, it cannot reveal the pure reflection of Brahman, which is Bhagavan. So they couldn't even see Bhagavan either, because Bhagavan is supposed to be actually manifested as Shiva Sattva. But by reaching this conclusion, the Mayavadis contradict the very point they're trying to prove, that Brahman reflects the upadhi Bhagavan. Okay. Upadhi means a false imagined conception, imagined feature. Okay, any comments? Yes.
If the answer is understandable, you very clearly explain this. There is one doubt in the question, the Mayavadi's proposal.
Yes.
We understand that in the Mayavadi philosophy there is no dualities of knowledge and the knower object and the knower of the object. If this is correct, then what is that they are saying that they are fully Brahman realized? Because your Brahman realized is supposed to, there's no distinction.
Well,
you.
Yes.
Plus, when they, this is one question. Second is, how they are seeing the Bhagavan and they are getting more intensely Brahman realized by seeing the Bhagavan. These two things I can
understand. Well, okay. Yes. Well, the Mayavadis probably would be happier if there was no delusion to deal with, no duality to deal with, that everything could just be one. Problem is, they have to explain the world that we actually see around us. Any philosophy should try to do that, not just talk, you know, pie in the sky, but deal with reality, or deal with what we actually see. And everybody sees duality, so they have to explain it somehow. What is this appearance of duality? So there is a realm of duality. Maybe it's imaginary, maybe it's not really there, but there's something they have to explain. In the realm of duality, that's where you have the divisions of knower and knowledge, object of knowledge. So they have to deal with those things. But in the absolute realm, the beyond duality, beyond illusion, there's no such thing. But in the regular world that we're actually living in, the world of duality, there are, and they have to, you know, explain how that comes about and how that works.
That's why my question is, if this is the case, why they're saying that they're fully Brahman realized?
Well, okay, that's the claim, because the scriptures tell us that. Not just the Bhagavatam, but many places it said, Sanat Kumar and his brothers were fully Brahman realized. We have to accept that as a, you know, something told us by scripture. We have to deal with that.
I mean, it seems like kind of contrary to that. But we realize that how they are seeing something as Brahman. That's kind of.
Well, yeah, it doesn't make too much sense how that can work. They shouldn't see anything.
Yeah.
They should be totally oblivious and to fully Brahman realize.
But
anyway, that Brahman, it doesn't, it's, you know, their whole idea of Brahmanization doesn't fit, work, it doesn't make sense. So there's no, you know, they can't explain how it makes sense, they can only, you know, pretend to explain it. There is no real explanation.
Okay, this is answer. The second question is that how the Mayavadi is.
Yeah, what do they mean by that? That this is more intense.
Yeah.
Because there's different qualities of illusion. Some are better than others. Some of them are purer than others. Just like mode of ignorance makes it more difficult to realize truth. Mode of goodness makes it easier to realize truth. So the absolute truth, once you've realized it, you'll see it everywhere. But, you know, it's helpful to meditate on God as a stepping stone to Brahman realization. Because, unlike other things of this world, God is pure.
Yeah.
And he's infinite.
Yeah.
He's not finite and he's not contaminated by rajas and tamas. Therefore, by meditating on him, an ordinary person might get a become more fit to realize Brahman, get closer to realizing Brahman. But here we're arguing, which doesn't stand up, But let's just say, you know, what are they trying to say? Even though what they say doesn't is archaeological, but what is it they're trying to argue? It seems to be that even the person who's already fully permanently realized, he can sort of upgrade his permanent realization by meditating on the Supreme Lord. because while they're still in this world, they got to continue living. And they're going to have to be looking at things. You know? And better they look at God than they look at a pile of stool. You know, it's going to help their permanent realization more. But the wrongness in that argument is they're talking about permanent realization becoming more. But that's what Jiva Goswami attacks. That's illogical according to their own theory. But they're trying to get away with it. You know, like doing a magic trick and slipping something under their hand, hoping you don't see it. So they're trying to get away with it, but actually it's not illogical. The idea that they can improve their Brahman realization by meditating on Narayana. If they already have it, then they have it. And there's no question of making it better or worse.
Compared to the material to spiritual, seeing Bhagavan is better than seeing the passion ignorance, because Bhagavan is in goodness, so
yeah.
They are upgrading their Brahman realization by seeing Bhagavan, which is part of the full Brahman reflected. But if they are limited, the four Kumaras are Brahman realized, that is, you are seeing whole Brahman, but now you are coming down seeing only Bhagavan, it's actually bring them down.
Well,
so
they're trying to avoid admitting that it's a come down. They're also dealing with reality. They imagine, see, it's a prejudice of Shankaracharya's that anyone who's a sannyasi is already liberated. Nobody but a sannyasi can become Brahman realized. And anybody who is a sannyasi, we can assume he is Brahman realized and call him, you know, Udo Udaraya. Just because he took sannyas. And anybody who didn't take sannyas can't become permanently realized. It doesn't make sense, but he actually says that. He actually, the Mayavadis, ever since then, that's their prejudice. But then you got all these Mayavadis running around, all these sannyasis running around. They're still in this world, and sometimes they show symptoms of maybe not being 100% permanently realized. You know, how do you that. So they have to start fully, you know, introducing analysis of degrees of Brahman realization. That they're jivan mukta. You know, they're realized, they don't actually see any illusion, they don't actually experience it, but they're living it out. They're living out their traces of their product of karma. You know, it's just their bodies and minds. Unraveling their prarabdha karma. The soul inside isn't experiencing anything. He's probably realized. You know, it's a jiva mukta walking around in it like a zombie in his material body. So, like that. They would, if they got down to it, if you really confronted them and enforced them, say, what is actually the condition of these four kumaras anyway?
Yeah.
They would say, okay, they're jiva mukta.
Yeah.
They're realized on the inside, but they're still dragging around material body and mind, and that body and mind are using up their last traces of karma.
Yeah. So that means they're not actually intensely focusing on the Brahman.
Well, if you say that, then they wouldn't want to admit that. Because the four kumaras are supposed to be fully permanently realized, not just 80% or 90%. It's supposed to be 100% realized. Somebody else, you know, somebody who took sannyas by mistake, it really wasn't ready to be the Ryan. You could argue about that. But this is the four kumaras. We're supposed to be the best of all the renunciants.
Yeah.
If they're not fully realized, who is? Then nobody is. Yes?
Meditating on the Lord's law.
Yeah.
Well, like we hear.
What, is there teaching Chaitanya Krishna?
No, the Rupman Bhakti is a process of realizing that we're all one.
That's their proposal.
Yeah.
That bhakti is another way to ultimately for Brahman realization. For
here we see that the different sense is that it's not possible to improve Brahman realization. Either you realize Brahman or not.
Well, right, but that's if we stay within the framework of the Mayavadi theory.
Yes.
You know, in from Mayavadi terms, yeah. You can't upgrade your Brahman realization.
Could we also say that actually, according to their logic, it doesn't make sense to practice bhakti in order to realize the formless Brahman?
Well, no, they could give the reasoning that bhakti helps you remove your disqualifications and reach the stage of Brahman realization. It's better than karma, or anyways, just as good as karma, as a way of removing traces of material attachment. But one who's fully Brahman realized, he doesn't need any bhakti. He doesn't need an object of worship, he's beyond that.
So how would they remove bhakti when they reach the point?
Well, you know, Bhagavan is graceful. He just he goes away and leaves alone. He's just an illusion. He just dissolves. He's an easier illusion to give up than the addiction to cigarettes or something. If you realize something better, you'll give up the inferior naturally. It'll just drop away.
Yes.
So what does it mean?
Mode of goodness, material mode of goodness helps you toward Brahman realization. Not that it is Brahman realization, but it's a step in the right direction. We agree to that, they agree to that.
These
are my buddies that are talking in previous paragraphs trying to say yes. But we don't agree. We would say that mode of goodness by itself doesn't help you become God conscious. You have to have some devotion, not just mode of goodness.
Also, I have a question about how God can be transformation of mode of goodness. Does that mean it's like a condensed mode of goodness or according to that theory?
God is a transformation. Well, because they're seeing that God is an illusion, he's produced. Illusions are made. You know, they're not eternal. They're creations. So God is also the creation then. What is he created out of? He's created out of pure goodness. When it gets imposed on the absolute truth.
Does that mean that the Buddha has to call it or Brahman and then somehow take some shape out of this covenant or what's going on?
Well, there are different explanations. One explanation that all that actually happens is something in our brains, our minds. It's just a Vijnanavad. That it's all in our minds. That there's a God is just something in our mind. On the outside, there is no such thing. Another explanation that there is somehow it actually happens. The whole theory is totally faulty. Because what is it that can cover over Brahman? A lot of Indian philosophers can accept that even some material things can be infinite. The time is infinite. The sky is infinite. So just being infinite is not a disqualification. But the problem is, what can have an influence on Brahman? What can, grab Brahman and make it and squeeze illusions out of it. What has power over Brahman? Brahman is completely independent, and there is no other thing. What's this other thing? They call it avidya, the power of illusion. But does it exist as a separate thing? Then your monist theory is finished. You have two different things. Brahman and illusion, two entities. Or it doesn't exist, then how can it do anything if illusion doesn't actually exist? How can it do anything? Especially do anything to Brahman. So the whole, there's no, you know, really they have a lot of, they're in trouble at the very beginning trying to explain how there can be any illusion, duality, in the first place. How can you squeeze duality out of Brahman? What makes it happen? So they don't have a proper explanation. Their explanation is just that there's a power of illusion and we'll refuse to say whether that illusion exists or not exists.
Does it mean that some kind of a Maya, something?
Kind of what?
It's a kind of a closed Maya.
Maya.
Maya covers Brahman.
Yeah, well, that's that they use the term Maya, but the Maya is a particular aspect of avidya.
Mm. So it's some energy which we see three modes of the illusion.
Energy, but that's a risky idea. You've got absolute truth, and then you've got some, beside him, you have some energy floating around. What's that energy? There's only supposed to be one reality. Reality plus extra some energy that's separate. No, that doesn't fit their theory. So they have to talk about this avidya, this power, but then they're in trouble trying, you know, if they have to explain what that avidya is or isn't. It shouldn't be there. There should be only Brahman.
I think you mentioned that this avidya is anivacchaniya. It means that it exists and at the same time it doesn't exist.
Well, anivacchaniya means inexplicable. You can't say whether it exists or not. But that's just they're evading the issue. They're avoiding, you know, the problem that it can't exist and it can't not exist. It's illogical. So they try to cover that up by saying it's inexplicable. We say that too, but we mean something different by that. Yeah, with our demented brains, we can't understand. But it's not that nobody ever can understand it. Can't be understood by mundane logic. But when you become Krishna conscious, then you'll understand.
But do they say also the same thing that we cannot understand?
Yeah, that's what they say. Is that currently in our conditioned state, we can't understand what this avidya is. When we become Brahman, realize, then we'll understand what it is. But that's a post-state check. Yeah. We can't explain our the basic, you know, points of our theory, but you'll understand it when you it's completely surrendered to us.
Yeah,
believe it, and yeah, it's pie in the sky. Okay, I think we used up our time. Anyway, these are basic understanding of what the Mayavadis are trying to do, what their game is. We should understand this. Jiva Goswami in the Sarasambhavati goes to great length to analyze and defeat this Mayava theory. Especially on the point of our insistence that there is real spiritual internal energy that the Supreme Lord has. And it has the whole, everything comes from that spiritual energy. So the Mayavadis try to deny that there's any energy or any variety in the Absolute Truth, we insist that there is. There is spiritual variety created by his internal energy. So Jiva Goswami gives about 60 pages in the Sarasambhavati to prove this against the Mayavadis, attacking every single one of their proposals. And he's borrowing, you know, from the previous arguments given by Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya. Alright, so we'll stop here. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
dead.
Okay, we're going to just take the adapter.
Yeah.